The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Onyx Hunt. Bringing you the best GPS mapping software directly to your smartphone or desktop, Onyx offers you the ability to see property boundaries, mark waypoints, track your location, and so much more. Visit onyxmaps.com or you can download it directly from your app store today. Save 20% off of your purchase by using the code NATION20 at checkout. That's capital N, nation, followed by the number 20.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the new series from the Backcountry Rookies called Stories from the Season. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and this is our new series of shows that we put together to highlight some of the stories from our friends and previous guests that we've had on the show. We always ask at the end of every podcast what plans people have for the year, and we never follow up with those people. So this series is intended to be that follow-up. The goal here is a no-fluff, just-the-hunt conversation. We aren't highlighting the training that went into the hunt. We're not highlighting the diets and the nutritions and just all of that extra stuff. We're highlighting the hunt, and we want to hear the story of that hunt. We plan to keep these under 30 minutes, so they're easy to listen to and they're fun to listen to, and you can pack in a few of them all together if you want to. We're going to do 12 or 13 of these. We're starting them in October. We wanted to roll it out in September, but we figured October was better because then we would have all those good archery hunts to start talking about and start recording. We're going to run it October through all the way through the December, so all the way through the first of the year. Also, last thing, make sure you leave us a review on this series. If this goes well, we're going to do this again next year. Just a short series of the hunting season, quick 30-minute shows. Let us know what you think. Leave us a review. Here we go. This week's Stories from the Season is with our friend Kyle Camp from Valley to Peak Nutrition. You might remember Kyle from, he's done a couple of shows with us way back in January. He talked about nutrition and prepping for the season and kind of how to build a nutrition plan throughout the off season. And then he also came on, I think it was back in August, and he talked about how to kind of prep your food for the mountain and properly food bags and, you know, calories and carbohydrates and sort of your nutritional needs for the backcountry. This Stories from the Season doesn't have anything to do with that. Kyle has a wonderful story to share, and it's a story of hardship, and it's a story of success, and it's a story of lessons learned. And when I first talked to Kyle about it prior to recording the podcast, him and I had a conversation about it, and I couldn't wait to get it recorded, and I couldn't wait to get it shared with the listeners of the Backcountry Rookies podcast. It's an awesome story. Kyle tells it well, and you can tell he's very passionate about it, and I'm excited to share this with you guys. So we'll roll it out. Here we go. Kyle Camp, Stories from the Season. Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Chad. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it. Always great to talk to you.
Absolutely. So this is a little bit different. Normally we have you on as Valley to Peak Nutrition, and you know, you come on and we talk about nutrition and all of that stuff. But today we're taking a wild left turn from nutrition, and we're just going to talk about hunting. Early in the year when you were on, we talked about some of the hunts that you had planned for this year. And as this show, like the whole meaning behind this show is to kind of recap people's hunts after the season is over. A lot of times we lose track of that when we have our guests on. We kind of lose track of what hunts they're doing. You have an exciting and special story, and I certainly want to share that with the listeners. So let's jump into it and talk about your, we'll just talk about the whole season, not one hunt in particular, but just, I'll let you tell your story. How about that?
Great. Yeah, perfect. So I suppose a little bit of background. I've been backpacking for a number of years, but it was only recently I started hunting. And so within the last 4 or 5 years, and have been just extremely fortunate for friends or family members or whatever to take me out on a number of hunts up until the point where I got my own license a couple of years ago and started hunting myself. And so, you know, to this point, up until this season, not only had I personally never taken any sort of big game animal, but even in all these hunts with my friends and families, family members, I'd never been with them when they had. So it sort of became the running joke that I was the bad luck charm because these guys were always able to at least kill something. And then all of a sudden I started going and they had like a 3-year dry spell. So that's a little bit of the background of this. And this is actually my second year archery hunting. And we did went for September, you know, probably half of the month, I guess, or so we were out and went the first weekend over Labor Day and just had a great time. Didn't see a ton of elk. I think we had 2 bugles over a 4 or 5 day hunt. And both of those were one on top of the other the first day we were there, and there just wasn't a ton going on. But like I said, a lot of fun. So then we go back in the third week of September, I think it was, and we had some horses and mules. So we went, you know, further back than normal, seven and a half miles or so back, and had most of this beautiful area to ourselves. And they were going, the bulls were really starting to go crazy then. So it was obviously pretty exciting. And actually the first morning of that hunt, we woke up and started up a ridge that was just outside of camp, got to the top of the ridge and let out a bugle. And there was a return bugle off in the distance on top of another ridge. And then there was another bugle that was just above us. Oh, maybe, I don't know, maybe just a couple hundred yards. He was up there bugling. So we decided to stay there for a bit and just try to set up. And so we set up, and no sooner than we get set up, this young spike still in velvet comes bounding out of the top of this hill that we were on. And man, you could tell I think he was just looking for love or some friendships or something, because he was real excited to come figure out what was going on. And so, you know, slowly he started to, there was a couple of us there, and he sort of came, he was coming towards us, obviously he couldn't see us, and started trying to make our wind. Well, before he'd started to come down, I just, you know, we started to range everything around us, because none of us were really sure if this bull was going to come off of the top, which was in front of us, or if they were going to come from behind us, because we had one going over there too. And so we just started ranging everything. And long story short, you know, last season, first year archery elk hunting, I'd had a number of close encounters, but, you know, didn't come to full draw, definitely didn't get a shot opportunity or anything of that nature. And so this guy is starting to loop us, and he's within bow range. Now, the guys that I'm with, they're extremely patient, and they want to get, you know, mature animals and as, you know, big as possible, which is awesome. And I'm sort of cleanup crew. I'm a meat hunter number one, and I could have cared less what was on his head, or even if it was a him. I just wanted to shoot anything legal. So anyway, he's looping, he's within bow range, and I'm, you know, at this point I'm getting incredibly excited, thinking, you know, this might be the chance. And so he's at 30 yards, and I knew there was a window. There was one small window because we were in a pretty heavily timbered area. And I thought, boy, if he comes in there, I'm going to have to figure out how to get the full draw and try to shoot him, because that's about the only window that I have, at least. And I knew those guys weren't interested in shooting this fight. So he pretty much textbook looped around, came behind 2 trees. And when his head was behind those 2 trees, I went the full draw. And of course, you know, they don't ever do what you want them to do. So he hung up there for what seemed like an eternity. And so I'm, you know, I'm at full draw and kind of getting to the point of where I either need to let down or shoot. And I couldn't shoot. And then he starts to move from beyond there, and he goes right into that window. So I, you know, I line my pin up, half thinking like, man, is this what this feels like? Is this what it's like to, you know, get ready to shoot your first animal? And it's not something I'd take lightly at all. And so I let my arrow go, and it, you know, come to find out, it blew straight through him. And, you know, I hit him, and he, you know, he goes maybe 50 yards or so, and he starts to get the sway. And I think he's, you know, going to go down, and my buddies are glassing him, and we're all obviously extremely excited. And the guy that's closest to me, he's like, man, that looks dead money. It looks like he hit him center of the body and double lunged him. So I'm getting excited. And, you know, not long after he gets the sways, he lays down. And, you know, he didn't look like, I mean, he had control when he lay down. It wasn't like he fell down. So we weren't really sure if he was dead. We were going to give him some time. And of course we had the conversation of, you know, well, do you go up and get another arrow in him? And, just felt like at that time, the risk of him getting back up and hauling over the basin and just out of sight was, greater than just letting him have some time and sort of backing out. So we were waiting, we were going to give him an hour or two. About 15 minutes into that wait, that dude got right up and walked off that hill. And we still gave it another hour thinking he might go to the bottom of this basin we were at and die. We'd go down there and find him. And long story short, never found him. And man, I was just incredibly heartbroken. That was my first experience. I was heartbroken for my, you know, my friends who had worked so hard with me over the past couple of years. Heartbroken for my family, because, you know, anybody that's gone on, you know, fall hunts knows how much of an investment in time it is, and to bring home meat. No, it's not the goal, but it sure is a nice, it sure is a nice prize to be able to bring something home, knowing how much time you've invested. And mm-hmm. we've got a little boy at home. He's 7 months, and so I was excited for him to get to try some elk meat. And anyway, I just got all of these emotions going through me, and just heartbroken, man, that this thing had left. And of course, I feel terrible for the elk itself. And so we looked for hours all over that place. There was a little bit of blood, but, you know, there wasn't a ton. And I think, you know, long story short, I ended up, I think, just hitting him too far back. He was definitely center of the body, and the blood had fletching, or the fletching had blood on it, and so it, you know, it went straight through him. And just heartbroken. That was my first experience. So, you know, pile that on top of, you know, the past 3 or 4 years, not only not shooting anything myself, but having had never been in this learning process with someone to see them shoot something and to be able to help them, you know, haul it off of the mountain. You know, I think it just all piled up and made me feel even worse than initially. So,
yeah, that's a tough break.
Yep, it was. It was definitely tough. It was definitely difficult. And, you know, I knew that I probably wasn't going to be a ton of opportunity that season to get another shot, man. I mean, that was the first opportunity I'd had in two or three years. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't thinking there'd be many more. And long story short, you know, we ended up having one or two other shot opportunities over that week. And then weather moved in and everything kind of shut down. And we ended up leaving on day 7 and no bulls, no elk at all. So everybody, I think, was pretty, you know, we had a great time. So that's the biggest consolation prize, but still kind of a bummer for nobody to walk out of there with the tag filled and then to have this situation happen on top of it. You know, I was obviously pretty heartbroken by it all.
Yeah. So that,
so go ahead.
No, you go ahead. This is your story.
So fast forward the rest of September. I don't think that, I think family stuff, you know, I was out like 15 days out of the month. So I needed to balance that with family. Didn't go out anymore after that week for elk. And so that was the elk season. And then you fast forward to October and, you know, schedules and whatnot. Just, I ended up having one day to hunt.
Let me ask you one question. In that time when you were home with family, how many times did that shot run through your head?
Oh, it still does every day. You know, I took, when I got home, it's very cliche. And especially if you listen to a lot of these podcasts, you'll hear it all the time. And it's easy just to let it come in one ear and out the other, but it's good information. I wanted that experience to at least give me a lesson. Right. And, so I came home and I just journaled it all. I wrote it all down. And, you know, I tried to come up with two or three things from the season, but more importantly, from that experience with losing him, to take away from it, right, to be able to apply towards future hunts. And, you know, I think one of those general consensus, because we all talked about it a lot, but if given the chance, at least for me, I think risking that elk, having it hauled tail over the mountain, I would probably trade that in and just go try to get another arrow in him.
Man, but it's such a tough call, though, because if you would have tried to get another arrow in him and you blew him out and he went over the ridge, you would be sitting here right now saying, I probably, I shouldn't have went to put that arrow in him, you know?
And that's true. That's true too. And it's a very difficult call to make, but I don't know. I just feel like if I can see him, it's worth me at least trying to sneak up there and get one in him rather than just letting nature take its course and sort of rolling the dice on it. But again, you're right. I mean, it's probably a case by case basis, but so that was definitely a lesson I'd walked away with. And, you know, the other one is just to try to settle myself a little bit more. I think I've been at full draw so long and I had all these thoughts sort of rushing in through my head. I probably, in retrospect, given the chance, and it's easy to say now, right, as opposed to in that moment, because your heart's just going nuts and you've got a million thoughts rushing through, but I think I'd try to take another deep breath, settle my pin exactly where I wanted it, and then release the arrow. I think the shot placement in terms of where it was on the body was good, aside from the fact that it was too far behind the lungs.
I would love to read that journaling that you did, because I guarantee you there's so many lessons that you learned in that hunt, playing the wind, stalking on animals. Just, there's so many things that we didn't come home with an elk this year either, but I took away just a pile of different information out of that hunt that I will be able to use next year.
It's a great point. And, you know, like, I think, you know, the silver lining, if you're going to find a silver lining with not harvesting anything for 3 or 4 years, and not only that, but the guys who are teaching you also not harvesting in that amount of time, but going on just a number of hunts, is you get an incredible amount of opportunity to learn lessons like that, right? I mean, you're out 4 or 5 days, 7 days, and you're doing the same thing every day. We've had a number of close encounters, just nothing in terms of connecting or even, you know, being able to have a shot opportunity. And so you know, those guys have just been incredibly patient with me. And so over those 3 or 4 years, I've picked up, I mean, stuff you couldn't buy from reading a book or listening to a podcast. And it's sort of become another cliche of, you know, one of the last parting shots a lot of guests usually leave for guys that are interested in doing Western hunting but have never been is, oh, you know, you just got to go do it. And it's true. You just have to go do it. It's the best way to learn the lessons that you can.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so elk hunt, the bad luck charm is still there, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on.
You could call it that.
Let's move on and talk about the rest of your season, because this is where it gets good.
Yeah, so in October in Idaho is the general rifle season for mule deer, and I always buy a tag just hopefully for an opportunity, but it's a buck only tag. And so I tried to go out, I think it was the first weekend that it was open, and you know, I got all my gear ready, and I had two issues pop up in terms of trying to get access to where I was planning to go. And so one botched plan led to plan B, and then whenever we got set to do plan B, that one just sort of fell apart. And anyway, it just didn't happen. So, you know, I knew I had one more Saturday to go, and because of taking so much time off for elk hunting and my son being born this year, I didn't have a ton of PTO left here at work. So I was pretty much, you know, I had to hunt basically weekends only. I had one Saturday left before the end of the season, which was October 26th. And so the guy who's been the best, just an incredible mentor, an awesome friend. He's extremely patient. He's taught me anything and everything I know about anything to do with bow hunting specifically, but hunting in general. He texted me during the week and said, hey, man, we gotta get you out. Let's go out Saturday. And this has become a common joke. He said, do you have any waders? Because every time we hunt together, we seem to be crossing some sort of river. And I said, you know, so anyway, long story short, he said, you know, we're going to need some waders. So picks me up. We meet up Saturday morning, go to this spot, which is it's a public land place here in Idaho. It's a very common place. I mean, I literally couldn't tell you how many hunters we passed coming in. There were so many. Anyway, we put on waders and we crossed this river, and the spot to begin hunting is essentially I think it's about 4 miles back with an elevation gain of about 2,500 feet over that 4 miles. You cross this river and then you climb that. And that, I mean, that cuts off, or at least you would think, cuts off a tremendous amount of people, which is the whole goal of going through the effort of something like that. You know, like I said, I'm not a trophy class hunter. I wasn't really concerned with the size of the buck. I just wanted him to be legal. So it's not like we're trying to get to someplace where there's just absolute giants. We're just trying to get somewhere where there's no people. So we do that and we finally get to the spot. You know, we sit down, grab something to eat. We're sort of looking at each other with excitement, thinking, okay, well, now the hunt can actually start. We can start getting our binoculars out and glassing to see if we find anything. And no sooner than we sit down, we just hear three or four gunshots, and there's four guys below us shooting at something on the basin we're looking at. And then, you know, you look up at the skyline and there's four guys on the skyline of this ridge that's in the distance, and they're up there. So there's essentially seven guys back in this hole where we thought no one would be shooting nonetheless. So, you know, another theme that comes up in a lot of podcasts is persistence. And this is the epitome of that. And, you know, hat off to my buddy Wayne, who I was with, because yeah, I think we were discouraged about that. But at the same time, you know, it really wasn't a conversation of, oh, well, let's tuck tail and just head back to the truck because our spot is blown. It was immediately, you know, okay, well, let's go look over in an adjacent basin and see if they're blowing something out, if we can pick something up. So we did. We dropped over into a basin that was just on the other side of this getting gunshots. And this place was, I mean, an absolute honey hole instead in terms of the number of deer there were. I mean, just countless deer. And of course, most of them does whenever you first started glassing for them. So then we decided just to sort of scoot down the ridge a little bit into glass for a while. We had lunch and just kind of sat there for a bit and glassed up a ton of deer, most of them does. And then we see a buck, a little 2-point, and then another smaller buck. And, you know, we're trying to decide, well, what's the best way to make a play on them? And then we find another one who is up on kind of middle of the hill, and he's separated from the rest of the group. And so we start glassing him, and he's a really nice 4-point buck. And, you know, we're glassing longer, and you can tell that he's got this limp. And so we get the spotting scope out. And long story short, someone had shot him in his back leg right at the knee, and he just couldn't put any pressure on it at all. He, you know, he was limping, and, you know, immediately we were kind of like, well, let's go. A, it's a nice buck. B, let's put him out of his misery because obviously he's hurting. And C, kind of common joke, it probably would take some sort of hurt buck for me to get a shot at it anyway at this point. So. So we decided to pack everything up and to try to make a play on him. And so we snuck down. He was on the adjacent hill. So we snuck down the hill we were on, had to cross a small drainage and then work up this other hill to get over to where he was. No sooner than we'd started to drop down, he was with five or six does. All the does picked us up and they blew out, but he's hurt, so he can't move far. So we climb up, we get near him, we see him. And, you know, we've kind of been hauling to get to him. And whenever I see him, you know, I typically shoot off of a rest. I don't really shoot a bunch of offhand shots. And he's close at this point. I mean, he's archery close, 50 yards, maybe, you know, 60 yards. And I can't, you know, my buddy's like, you know, he's right there. And I just can't see him. I mean, I couldn't find him. So finally I pick him up in the scope and I shoot over his back because I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not compensating for how close we are. And of course, you know, you got so many things going through your mind at this point. And he's starting to move a little bit, right? And so then, you know, I kind of get settled, get on a little bit of a rest on a pack. And at this point, he's still under 100 yards. So I shoot again, and he does that movement like when a deer gets hit, sort of jumps a little bit, arches his back a little. And then he goes down in this aspen patch. And so we think, you know, I think that I've shot him. I think that, you know, we did what we came to do or whatever. And so we start to go over there and go retrieve him. And no sooner than we were probably 30 or 40 yards, that dude got up out of that aspen patch and cut tail across the side of that mountain with that broken leg behind him dangling like he didn't care if it worked or not. I mean, he was moving pretty good pace. And so he didn't seem hurt at all. And so I'm at this point, dude, you know, immediately I'm thinking back to hitting that elk and I'm like, this cannot be happening again. And tried to find a blood trail and there was no blood, none at all. I mean, as a matter of fact, we found his tracks and the whole place was littered with deer. So it became really hard to try to figure out if it was another deer. And, you know, we found two parts where he had lost actually some muscle tissue, some meat off of his legs from the back where it was blown, where someone had shot him in that knee. And looking back on it, I don't think I hit him. I think I probably shot over the top of him, maybe caught some fur, which scared him. But because that back knee was broke, he was trying to brace himself in an aspen patch, which of course there's no stability in that. I think he fell, was trying to regain his strength. And as we started walking, you know, he cut tail. I'm not 100% sure that I hit him. And if I did, it definitely wasn't fatal. Although I'd imagine that shot where he got hit in the knee, he'll get in, you know, probably get infected or he won't make it through the winter or what have you. But anyway, man, that in combination with missing or losing that bull, I was just heartbroken. I couldn't put him out of his misery. And I don't want to be dramatic, but I was in a pretty low place.
I can only imagine.
It's mid-afternoon and, you know, it's starting to get relatively dark. It looked like there was a storm coming in. I knew this was my last Saturday and genuinely just kind of thought, God, man, I should probably just hang up my hat with this hunting thing because this is ridiculous at this point. Meaning not that it's difficult, but that I would, you know, not be able to take two animals that are within range for me to be able to do so is just a mix of emotion, obviously heartbreaking too. And I don't know if I hit that deer or not, but to be unable to put him out of his misery is just really defeating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tough.
So we were getting ready to leave. We search all over that basin trying to find him, and it's just deja vu all over again. And we couldn't. I mean, we looked all over that place for him. He wasn't around limping. He wasn't down. He wasn't anywhere. So we start, you know, making a plan to walk back to the truck. And so we're probably 4 miles from the truck at this point. And long story short, we're walking out and my buddy, you know, we see probably 6 or 7 deer on a real steep hillside above us, about 300-400 yards away. And at this point, like, I'm so dejected, I don't even bother getting my binoculars out. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, for anyone who's not hunted out here, you usually see a ton of doe, but very rarely will you see bucks. And so I was feeling dejected, and I thought, well, the chance that there's just going to be a buck strolling through there is very limited. And then my buddy was in front of me a couple of hundred yards, about 100 yards or so. And so he gets his binoculars out again, just that persistence, name of the game thing. And he looks at me, he's like, man, there's a buck in there. And so, I hate to say this, but I was like, oh, should I shoot it? Like, I was just feeling like, man, I should just, like, I'm done for the year. Let's go home. He's like, no, get up here. Come on. He was so encouraging, man. I just can't say enough about him and, you know, how vital it is to go with someone that you, someone who is a good hunting partner. And, he took his pack off and got his trekking poles out and threw a strap over one of the trekking poles, you know, threw a strap from one trekking pole over the other one, made a wedge, and I put my rifle in it. And there was a buck. He was at the end of the line. There were six or seven does, and he was at the end of it. He was 277 yards up this hill, and I put my crosshairs on him, shot him straight through the heart, and he went about 20 yards and piled up in some aspens. And, you know, like, my buddy, he's just like, oh my, wait, what a good shot. Congratulations. And I was like, man, I'm not celebrating anything until I go up there and I see he's actually dead.
Yeah.
And so we hiked up there, and man, sure enough, as soon as we got up there, it started sleeting. And, here was this buck that was laying there, and man, just a well of emotion after 3 or 4 years of working really hard, and you know, nothing's given, and I get that. I knew that. I still had a ton of fun, great lessons, but to be able to finally feel like, you know, all of that time was worth it, man, I can't even find the right single word to describe that moment of not only my first buck, my first big game animal, my first buck with the guy. You know, if you would ask me, well, who would you like to take something with for your first time, it would have been him, because he's invested so much in me. And after just all that, it was just such an emotional experience. It was incredible. And you know, like, I'm already counting down the days to go back again next year. It's pretty phenomenal, man.
Pretty phenomenal. And that's, so when you and I first talked about this story, first off, congratulations on your deer. I think it's an amazing story. And what I think is really cool is everything that you went through, from the hardship with the elk, and then the sort of hardship with that first buck with the broken leg. I mean, it's hardship one way or the other. You took a shot at it. And then just to persevere, because there's a lot of people that would have hung it up right there, like you said, taking up a new hobby or something. Where's the racquetball court, right? You know, they give up on hunting and totally done with it. And to persevere and come back and take that buck, I think, is pretty awesome. So congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I appreciate it. I was, you know, to be able to, you know, take him off the mountain and quarter him out and carry him out. And then when I got home, you know, to be able to process him in my garage and package him and know that that'll be for friends and family. I don't want to over dramatize it, but it genuinely was just an incredible experience. And it gave me almost just an entirely new appreciation of public land, because without that, like, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to go at all, you know. And it's just, there's so much wrapped up in it. Not just that, just the experience of being out there so much and finding success and just so much gratitude. And it was awesome, man.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, Kyle, thank you for coming on and sharing your story. And I hope so. They're either educational, right? We're always trying to get education or inspiration or something out of all of these stories from the season. And I think you certainly bring education and inspiration out of that. I think there's a lot to be taken away out of this podcast. So thanks for coming on and thanks for sharing the story.
I appreciate it, man. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. Real quick, just before I let you go, if you would just go ahead and share all your contact information again, and I'll be sure to put it in the show notes also.
Yeah. the Instagram handle or whatever it's called is, it's sort of a business Instagram handle, but it's my personal one too, for the most part. It's how you can reach me if you need to, but it's, the letter V, the number two, the letter P, Nutrition. So it's V2P Nutrition, stands for Valley to Peak Nutrition. Same Facebook thing, same website, so V2PNutrition.com. There's a link in there to email me if you got questions or whatever.
Yeah, cool. Kyle is also linked under our partners page on our website. So if you don't remember any of that stuff, you can find him on our website. And I think there's an email, and at least your website is on there, so you can click the link to the website and then get in touch with him, or get in touch with us, and we'll get everybody linked up that needs to talk to him. So, all right, Kyle, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks again, Chad. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, guys, just a reminder before we close this thing out, check us out on social media and check out the website. So we're at Backcountry Rookies on Instagram, Backcountry Rookies on Facebook. We have our own private Facebook group called the Backcountry Rookies Nation, where people are welcome to come in there and share and ask questions, and they get answers. And we've got a huge group of people I want to say there's about 1,700 people in there right now, everybody from experts to rookies. So there's a whole wealth of knowledge in there to ask questions. And website, backcountryrookies.com. check all that stuff out. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Bye.